Welcome into the Draft Report Podcast. I'm Jack Borowski, joined here alongside my co-host Sam Keats. On this episode, we talk all things quarterback, discuss risers before finishing off the episode with the top prospects we've watched recently. So, Sam, quarterback talk, as always. There wasn't a key game. Well, let me rephrase that. There wasn't a key game worth talking about, as Oklahoma-Tennessee just truly was as boring as you get, did not live up to the hype at all. Snooze fest, kind of a defensive battle, but I'd say more poor offense than great defense is what I'd call it. So not worth talking about. Unfortunately, got some good games coming up though. Georgia, Alabama, this upcoming weekend. But we got to talk quarterbacks as always. You know, last year's like, who's QB3? It's changing every week, and then all of a sudden, Jaden Daniels was the guy, and then he ended up being quarterback two. So we had this whole thing like we know who one and two are. And then we actually did it. So everything could change so much up until draft day. But we want to highlight six quarterbacks from this weekend who played good enough teams to talk about. Granted, it's still weeks 1 through 4, so not conference play yet. But we're going to talk about Cam Ward versus USF, Kyle McCord versus Stanford, Shedeur Sanders versus Baylor, Garrett Nussmeier versus UCLA, Cade Klubnik versus NC State, and Miller Moss versus USC. Let's start with Ward against USF. I wasn't going to include him at first because it was USF, and I was like, we talked about Jalen Milroe against USF. So I was like, all the top quarterbacks who play USF, we got to talk about them. How do you think that Cam Ward played in this game?
Yeah, USF, sort of like what they did with Alabama, was in this game early, and I feel like Ward was missing a little bit high. Didn't put as much touch on throws as he should have early, like very early on for the first, let's say, quarter or so. He was missing just high and long a lot. And then he hit that 76-yard hole shot to Sam Brown on the sideline between the corner and the safety. And it was just like all gas, no brakes from that point on. And he kind of really got into a flow. And you saw him start to layer the ball more, so to put more touch in the ball. Of course, he was still shooting in the rockets that he does downfield. And from that point on, it was pretty much lights out. So he had some issues early in the game, and then he really got into a rhythm at the midway point of the second quarter, I want to say. And then he was just lights out from that point on. The chemistry he has with Xavier Restrepo really pops to me, I think. Like, among the receivers there, they have a lot of talented ones. I think he has the best chemistry with Restrepo because he had that one back shoulder throw to the near sideline where Restrepo just makes an amazing catch. And then they have a short end zone shot where Ward just kind of floats the ball up there and lets Restrepo go get it near the front pylon. I like how much trust and faith he's putting in these receivers. That one interception he had in the game really wasn't on him, if I recall correctly, but he's definitely getting a lot more chemistry built with these receivers, and you can see how they're interacting now. Compared to even like week one to now, it's vastly different. I think he's putting a lot more faith, especially in Restrepo, to go out and make plays on like difficult to catch windows and stuff like that.
The interception he threw was a really good throw on a dig route to Jacoby George. I thought they should have called it a fumble because I thought he took, I never understand the rules of any of this, but he made a football move. Like, he caught the ball and took two steps and then just kind of like lost the ball. But they called it an interception. I didn't think it was. I thought it was a great throw. You know, that's kind of where like these stats can sometimes be misleading. Yeah, it wasn't perfect early on. I felt like USF was throwing everything out there. They tried an onside kick. They did the Philly special play, threw to a touchdown to Byron Brown. I thought, Ward, though, he had a couple plays where pressure is right there, and it doesn't faze him at all. He really rips the ball.
I was going to say, one more talking point on Ward. With the whole dancing around thing in the pocket, the creativity, when the line breaks down, there's pressure. That has always, there's always come a point when that's no longer sustainable for him because he just fumble or he'll get hit so often. We haven't seen that happen this year. Like, the pocket's still breaking down, defenders are still getting pressure on him, but no one's actually getting the ball out. No one's actually forcing him to fumble. No one's actually sacking him. Like, he's getting away every time. So it's just really fun to point out, like, the level of creativity has always been there. It's always been elite, but he's been almost untouchable so far at this point in the season in terms of when he's doing that. And that's gotten him in trouble in the past, but again, with the fumbles and all the issues he has there, none of that this year whatsoever so far. Like, really good ball security and still doing what he does in terms of throwing back across his body into the middle of the field and extending plays for 3+ seconds. And it's all seemed to work out so far. despite having a lot of pressure still coming at him.
Now he can really rip the ball too. The velocity is great, right? You talked about last year he had that problem where he would just drop the ball, which wasn't on his 2022 tape. And I don't know what's happening. Like every game or so, he would just drop the ball. He's trusting his receivers, putting the ball where it needs to be for the most part. Now he had a couple of misses early on, but besides that, he was pretty much perfect. He's been effective as a runner. He had that one play. He was actually, his knee was down, but he ran and then flipped it to the running back. That was like pretty impressive awareness. He's just very much in control. I think he knows how much better he is than everyone else who's on the field. And anytime it's a third and six plus, he'll just hit Xavier Restrepo. Like the way they're converting on third down is phenomenal. I'm like, their run game sucks. You know, every week, you know, it's Ball State, it's FAMU, it's South Florida. Yeah, Damian Martinez scored a lot of touchdowns, but like on a down-to-down basis, they're not running the ball well. It's just him. You know, Sam Brown hasn't been great. I know he caught that touchdown, but that was more of a better throw than something Sam Brown did route-wise. And, you know, he's fast enough to take it to the house. But he's had some unfortunate drops. Jacoby George, you know, handed USF a touchdown, basically, on that interception. And then he's been okay, I guess. Restrepo is very good. But this is the Cam Ward show. This is a good enough team with Cam Ward. This is not like, oh, Miami's got an elite offense. Like, yeah, like they've been without their left tackle for a few games. Their left guard, no. Their right guard got hurt. Like, this is just him doing what he's doing. He doesn't have like the same offense Texas, one of the other top teams, has. And he's just killing it.
And they have some defensive talent, but they don't have an elite defense either. Like, you don't look out there and see Michigan's defensive line / secondary. You don't look out there and see what Texas has in terms of defensive talent, or Georgia, or even like to some extent Bama. You just don't see that at Miami, but they're operating at the level of one of those programs right now because of what Ward does for you offensively and how it forces teams into negative game scripts and then to try to really press themselves into bad situations. But yeah, I think really Restrepo's been a big winner this year so far in terms of like him and Ward have clicked. And on top of that, because of the way the other receivers have performed so far, it really pops because Restrepo's just consistently making plays. So like he's actually helped himself, maybe not in one singular week, but in like the aggregate of the full season, has actually helped himself out quite a bit so far.
Nah, he's got good hands. He's reliable. Great college player. It was a good find for Miami. Next up, Kyle McCord against Stanford. Week one, I'm pretty sure, they played a Western Michigan or a team like that. I can't remember. Or maybe in Ohio, something along those lines. And he played really well. And I was like, all right. And then they played Georgia Tech, that vaunted Georgia Tech team that had beaten Florida State. Turns out neither Florida State nor Georgia Tech's a good team. And he did very well. And then he put up some pretty solid numbers against Stanford. They didn't end up winning. He had a couple interceptions. We texted about it during the game. And it felt like every play you could make a reaction to, like, oh, that was a great play. Or, oh, my God, what did he just do? What were your takeaways from how he played?
Yeah, there were some throws McCord made in this game that had me rethinking my entire take on Kyle McCord in like a good way. There were some throws he made here. I was like, wow, that was just next level stuff. I didn't realize the arm talent is as good as it is. Like that kind of surprised me a little bit. Some of the arm strength he showcased. But then there's the decision making is just not it right now still. The one interception, not his fault. They looked like there was some maybe his fault, but there was miscommunication with the intended target and led to the interception, even though the DB had his eyes on it the whole way. The other interception absolutely was Cal McCord's fault. He threw it directly to the defensive back. I don't know if he thought the DB was going to stay in the flat and cover the player going to the flat, or if he thought he just miscalculated the amount of air to put on the ball, but it was just not even close to being catchable for the receiver. Went right to the defender. Very up and down game. Kyle McCord comes out of this looking very much like an old-fashioned gunslinger. He's kind of going to live by the sword, die by the sword type of player, which might honestly be his best path to success, frankly, because if you have that kind of arm, you have some mobility, I don't think he's ever going to be an elite, efficient level player where you're just not, you're getting all the pop plays, but none of the negatives. I think you're going to get some of the negatives, and he kind of just has to, in my opinion, ball out and go all out here with some of these big-time throws to really justify value for his draft stock. So it's going to be a roller coaster player. But at the same time, we've seen like, but some of the guys who've been drafted where they've been drafted the past couple of years, like Kyle McCord could go fifth round quite easily. And I wouldn't really blink an eye because he's got the arm for it. I just don't think he's ever going to be a starter in the NFL.
The biggest concern I have is he obviously doesn't handle pressure too well because there was a lot of pressure last year being the starting quarterback at Ohio State, and nobody cares if you're the starting quarterback at Syracuse and he's playing legit football now, where if he just did this last year, they win the national championship, right? Like if he could do anything like he's done so far, if he took any of the chances he took, it was just Marvin Harrison Jr. bailing him out all season long and he looked horrendous. Where now he looks like an entirely different player. So obviously the pressure, I think, got to him. He played nervous. He played not like a five-star recruit that he was. And he did. He has this past few weeks. He's been very good. And they got some good receivers, good running back. So, yeah, he's 100% draftable right now. Shedeur Sanders. Or did you have one more thing to say on him?
No, I was just going to say, like, his time to throw is about the same. He's getting pressured even more in games now than he was last year, but he's performing better. It's just a very weird dichotomy of how this is working out for him. But I feel like a lot of people raise the point, like, oh, he'll go to Syracuse and be fine. Like, I feel like we heard a lot of that in the summer. He'll just go to Syracuse and be a totally fine quarterback. And it seems to be the case, which is just really weird that how predictable this was. But I think, and he's definitely thrown his way into the draft. But I think you hit all the key points.
Now, speaking of guys under pressure a lot, Shedeur Sanders, like you watch this offensive line play and it's like they make anyone look like, you know, the vaunted Steelers defenses or Bears defenses from back in the day. How did you think he fared against Baylor?
Yeah, I still have some of the same concerns that I've had with him constantly in terms of throwing off his back foot or throwing off off platform while they're shooting without sitting his feet. He still has some of those underthrown go routes, which really concern me. I just don't think he's got the elite arm strength to really push the ball to all levels of the field and lead receivers downfield. But that being said, this game, I mean, really showcased this little creativity he has. He's not as mobile as Cam Ward, in my opinion, not as stout as him either. But if you go like a tier down, you probably find where Shedeur is right now in terms of his ability to roll out and just still create off platform out of the pocket. He can still do all of that, even make guys miss pressure wise, which he did a couple times in this game. There, you can isolate probably four or five throws, I would say, in this game that were really high level. One of which I think wasn't even counted as a catch. I think they probably reviewed it and took it off. I couldn't tell from the All-22. But he had a couple really nice throws in this game. And that was in spite of the offensive line playing so poorly. There were a couple of Baylor defenders. I had to look up the numbers to see who they were. I'm like, yeah, these are players I heard of before, but they're in like the sixth or seventh years in college because they've just been there constantly on the defensive line. This was a really good game, I think, for Shedeur because he was under pressure constantly and he was still creating it. I think some of the same ticks and flaws we've talked about are still there. They're probably going to be there throughout the entirety of the process just because of how that offensive program is constructed. But I do think Shedeur walks away from this game looking quite good because the number of plays he made without making any of those significant, like, horrendous throws. But I do think you have to get the ball out faster than he did in this game. I mean, 3.5 seconds time to throw is just not translatable to the NFL for a player like Shedeur, who's not an elite Lamar Jackson-level athlete. But I will say, like, this was the first game I watched in All-22 for Colorado and thought, wow, none of these receivers are separating at all. Like, outside of Travis Hunter, no one else is separating. Especially like Will Shepard, number 14, absolutely no separation at any point in this game. I really came away from this game a little shocked with how poorly I thought the receivers played, again, outside of Travis Hunter.
It's just tough. We have the same conversation every week. Shedeur plays a below average Big 12 team, makes some really impressive plays. There's the same concerns we have and have always had about him. And then we just move on to the next week. And it's just the same thing over and over again. If, you know, we'll never be able to, like, if they played Texas or even Oklahoma, let's just say in Big 12, they were still there, he'd get dismantled. So, but then you can't really determine how well he played because the team around him is so bad. You know, I watched the left tackle Jordan Seaton play just because I was like, man, this offensive line sucks. And he's horrendous right now. He was the number one recruit in the country, 5-star, but he's still a true freshman starting at left tackle. You know, Shador has to do so much, but then he's developed such bad habits. And the natural tools aren't phenomenal, but I did think he played very well overall in this game. Are you gaining more separation between he and Ward, or, you know, are they getting close? Like, where are you at with the two of them?
It is difficult because Ward doesn't have a stud offensive line. Definitely has much better than what Shadir's dealing with right now. I think that Ward, like I said throughout the process, Ward has a much higher ceiling, in my opinion, because his tools are so much better. And he's so much more accustomed to playing this way and having it all work out because of how he performs and how he is able to constantly hit the throws, but also hit the guys in stride more often than Shadir. I don't know that gap is really developing right now because neither of them have faced a team that I look at and say, this is a juggernaut program. They just came out and beat. They're both like, the Miami win against Florida looked great in week one. Well, Florida just is not a very good program. Shadir's eking out wins versus North Dakota State and Baylor. Like, it's just not good schools, and his team overall is not playing that well. So I think that I haven't really established separation between the two, but I think at this point, I would have Ward above Shadir in my quarterback ranks.
Interesting there. Nussmeier versus UCLA. Takeaways from that game.
Yeah, I'm starting to get a little worried about Nussmeier's footwork and some of the bad tendencies he's developing back in the pocket. I don't think he or, frankly, anyone expected him to get pressured as much as he has been so far this year because of how talented LSU's offensive line is on paper. But he is getting heated up more often than we expected. He does hold the ball a bit longer than most top quarterbacks, partially because he's looking for the big play. He wants to generate that downfield push most of the time. But he lacks that level of mobility and creativity that we see in players like Cam Ward. Doesn't have that ability to navigate in the pocket and make guys miss in short areas. So this is crucial for him to maybe be more willing to take the check down and be a little bit more willing to find the easy out than trying to constantly find the big play. But outside of the footwork, he's still making a lot of big throws. I feel like he's really improved and is solidifying himself as this first-round caliber quarterback. Or a player who at least would get a second-round grade and then gets picked in the first round because that's how quarterbacks work right now. But there really is no mid-tier quarterback market in the NFL, and there's no second-round quarterback market really in the draft anymore with how these things happen. But Nussmeier, I don't view him as I don't put him in the same tier as the top four QBs right now, but he's definitely the next guy up, and he's definitely a first-round caliber player for making like a predictable mock draft. He's up there because of what he can do. He has the arm talent to really zing it in there. Some of the anticipation throws he's making are really impressive for a player who doesn't have a ton of starting experience. But I just go back to the footwork and maybe being more poised than the pressure, maybe making quicker decisions and getting the ball out faster to some easier options. I think that's what he really needs to improve on, because he's partially inviting a bit of pressure to him, but it's also the offensive line not playing up to the level we expected from them. And his receivers have to help him out a little bit more. Like, frankly, the LSU wide receivers, it's supposedly talented a bunch. They do have some splash plays as a group. But right now, like, Kyron Lacy dropped one or two passes this past game. He's had some drop issues early this year. These guys just have to do a little bit more to help him out, because he is putting on some really accurate throws that aren't ending up being completions because of how the receiving room is performing.
With him, you bring up some good points. The footwork, yes. Yeah, the pressure for how good the offensive line has been, I think just over the course of the season, it's gotten progressively to the point where it's like, what's going on there, tiny bit. I thought Campbell actually looked pretty good, though, overall. But just in general, yeah.
It's more so the other side of the line I'm worried about.
He and Dellinger, I think, have done well. But like Campbell, 2 weeks ago, you watched South Carolina. I went back and rewatched him. Like, Kyle Kennard's killing him. It's like 3 or 4 reps from, like, he just lost. You know, and not saying Kyle Kennard's not good, but like, this isn't Dallas Turner or Darius Robinson from last year. Like, this is a fine player, but someone who wasn't even considered draftable before the season. So I know this turned more from more to offensive line than Nussmeier, but the team's also just not good. Their defense still isn't good. Do you think he comes out based off what you see?
I think you should. I mean, there's no... I'm not as in the weeds as some people are when it comes to recruiting and that kind of stuff and transfer portal stuff, but I don't see how this program's going to get better in like from this year and next year. I just don't know how it will get better outside of you just pull an Ole Miss and you just bring in like four potential first round picks through the portal. I just don't see LSU getting to be the level of program right now that we see from a Georgia. And frankly, I think they're too flawed to really even when Alabama's at their best and is firing on all cylinders and not doing this weird slow start type stuff to games. I think that Bama's much better than LSU. And I don't think that 1 year will fix that. So if I'm looking at Nussmeier, even if he's QB5 on a lot of boards, we saw based on this past year, you might be QB5 on most boards, but you might be just QB3 on someone's board. That's all you need to be a top 10 pick. Like you, it doesn't take much to get someone to take JJ McCarthy or someone to take Bo Nix and Michael Penix in the first round where they end up going. It just, the way the QB market right now is so messed up in the draft that I think if you're Nussmeier, you just go be a first round
pick. I do wonder, this is more big picture. We've seen pretty much every quarterback in the NFL struggle this year, maybe besides Josh Allen. Like they've all had their struggles. You see the resurgence of a Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield over the last couple of years, you know, the way he's improved. Jared Goff gets into that situation. I wonder if teams are more willing, like, let's go try and get a veteran to build around, even Geno Smith, because these young guys, it's like, oh my gosh, you're looking at what's happening in Chicago with Caleb Williams, and it's just, he's so talented. But like, you see, like, if you're in win now mode, I think it's becoming tougher and tougher to be a rookie quarterback and have success. You know, like you look at Richardson, what's going on there? Like he's trying to lose them games. You know, Bryce is benched. Andy Dalton comes in and has the best game they've had from a quarterback in a while. Will this last? I don't know. But then on the other hand, you look at the Raiders and it's like, well, they did it, but it's not working, so you might as well go young. So I don't know if teams are going to be like, you know, we took six of them in the first round last year. You know, Drake May's not playing. Caleb Williams struggled more than everyone expected for, you know, what he was thought of as a prospect. Bo Nix, I know he won last week. I haven't watched the tape yet, but those first two weeks, he was not ready to play NFL football. You know, Penix not playing, McCarthy's not playing, but Darnold's look good. So I just wonder if more teams are reluctant to take first-round quarterbacks. It's like considered a weaker class, even though I think these four would all be in that worse than McCarthy tier and better than Penix and Nix. And the Penix and Nix went 8-12 last year. So I don't know. But I do wonder if like Nussmeier's dad's a coach in the NFL too, if they're like stay in school or not. We'll see. I wonder if we're going to see less quarterbacks drafted in the first round this year.
Yeah, I think that's totally an option because I think the pendulum might swing the other way. It's very tough. We're going to get that year where we get one first round quarterback and everyone ends up falling to the second round. Or we get them all in the first round again. I really think there's going to be no in between for the NFL. That being said, there are going to be some franchises that just will desperately need young quarterback play. And they're like the Giants. Regardless, whoever is leading the Giants next year will have no option but to take a quarterback. But they're going to have to. So we know, and there are a couple of organizations like that will just have to take a quarterback. So I think that we're going to see a few taken. It feels like, but I understand the fear that we might be swinging back the other way where we don't get many first-round guys. Because if you can just go out and sign a Andy Dalton for $5 million a year, and you have a guy who can play 17 games for you and get just 6 or 7 wins, why would you go out and use a higher round pick on a quarterback right away in a weak draft class? You can do an Andy Dalton year deal for a year and draft maybe like a top tackle or top receiver.
No,
instead.
If the Raiders or Giants, like, in terms of offense, you know, the Giants have neighbors. If they go out and get another weapon in free agency with the money they'll get back from cutting Daniel Jones, try and shore up the offensive line a little bit more. It's like, all right, them and the Raiders, like, makes a little more sense. Where you're Carolina, you're like, this is just a mess. Why don't we just stick with Dalton for a year? Draft some help. Like, we don't have an edge rusher as good. Let's take James Pierce, you know, or whoever it may be. Let's wait. I don't know, because we're seeing how much success some of these older quarterbacks are having in good situations and how it's been a struggle for some of the younger quarterbacks who are not in good situations or maybe not ready to start and have been forced to. You know, I wonder what the Broncos record is if Jared Stidham's the starter. I know Nick's was a little bit was better this past week, but would they be actually a decent enough team if he was their starter? And, you know, Bo put them in a position where, you know, they couldn't beat the Steelers in week two and they couldn't compete with the Seahawks in week one. So I'm not going to include the Steelers in any of these conversations because they're the luckiest team ever and they should not have three wins with, what do they have, three offensive touchdowns? This is ridiculous.
Remember the year we started out like 12-0? That was like the most ridiculous 12-0 start, whatever it was. Most ridiculous undefeated start ever.
So rough. But speaking of quarterbacks who should be taken really high, Cade Klubnik, who has killed it against App State and now NC State. He's going on the Carolinas run right now, trying to take them all down. He was really good against NC State. You being a Clemson fan, was that his best game he's ever had by far?
Oh, I mean, I don't know if it's the best game, but the best two-week stretch by far, like not even close. Like you could go back to like him playing, I don't know, Fordham or whatever he played last year. It wasn't Fordham. Who was it? Whoever it was, whatever the easy team was that we paid millions of dollars to come lose in our home stadium, he was not even close to that. Like Charles Southern last year, like not even close to what he was the other day. Charles and Southern, like Cade, the difference the past 2 weeks compared to the Georgian, compared to previous years, the difference you see is one, the receivers are catching the ball as opposed to dropping it. That's been an issue for the entire time, basically since T. Higgins left. Just guys just don't seem to hold on to the football. They even had three drops against Georgia. They have dropped one pass the past 2 weeks. But for specifically to Cade, the way the offense is working right now, it's a lot of short, easy access stuff. There's not a lot of extra processing you need to do. And whereas Cade wouldn't take the outlets in the past, he's actually taking those shorter options right now and allowing Clemson skill position players to earn yak. And there's good skill position players on this team with Brinningstuhl and Mafa and Antonio Williams. There's good players here. They just haven't gotten them the ball much in the past. In the past 2 weeks, they've been getting them the football and letting them create afterward, which has been huge for them. But Cade also is getting the ball much quicker now. He held the ball an average 2.8 seconds against Georgia, and it's been down to like 2.2 and 2.3 the past 2 weeks. He's getting the football out quickly to some of those easy access lanes, and I hope that this is a trend the offense takes as a whole because it's what maximizes what he can do best right now. So you have these short early access plays to keep the offense in rhythm, and then you call up a shot every now and then. And Cade has really, this is the part I think that's really impressed me for Cade, is the accuracy on the deep throws right now has just been insane. The ball placement has been nuts the past couple of weeks in terms of what he's throwing deep. There was even a play against NC State this past weekend where I forget if it was up the seam. It was on the right side of the field, downfield, and the corner just seemed to punch the ball out really well. And the receiver had a shot at bringing it in, but the corner knocked it out, even though it hit the receiver pretty much in stride. And Clemson came back and ran almost the exact same play and hit it again. Like Cade is just unconscious right now when it comes to accuracy down the field and ball placement. He's never been like this before, but he is really using the in-rhythm throws and the short options to get himself in the right state of mind to get the ball out, get the ball downfield and have it level of accuracy. And then with his legs on the ground, he's actually a pretty quick quarterback who can give you a lot of options in the open field. He just hasn't had many opportunities to really open up and run for long plays, but he's had some of those chances these past 2 weeks. This is the quarterback I felt like he was billed as coming in, and it's the first time in 3 years I'm seeing it, so I'm very excited, and I hope he sticks around for quite a while.
I'm hoping, because I do like when Clemson is good. You know, Dabo can be a little annoying, and you know his process and how he goes about winning games and the transfer portal thing can be annoying. But it would be nice for Miami to have another contender in the ACC. You know, we don't want a cakewalk. We want something. But holy smokes, has he been phenomenal the last few weeks? You know, I didn't watch more than two highlight plays of the App State game that were shown on ESPN. I watched this first half. It was a beatdown enough that I said we had to include him. That's how well he played. The deep ball accuracy, phenomenal. I think he had one that was dropped. That was, you know, one of his best throws. I think it was Antonio Williams went through his hands, kind of. But yeah, he, you know, the arm strength, athleticism, getting the ball out quick, fiery on the sideline too. Like, he's got a little swagger and confidence to him now. He's not a guy for this year, but he may actually legitimately be a 2025 NFL. Wait, no, this is the 2026 NFL draft prospect. we'll see what they bring back and everything, who goes to the NFL, who doesn't. But yeah, this is the most impressed I've ever been with him, because last year he was losing to Miami's backup quarterback. Like, that's how bad it was. He looked like he's not anywhere close to an NFL player at that point.
Yeah, I have some Clemson fans who've been DMing me, being like, I don't know what to think. Tell me what to think about this. I'm like, I have no idea either. I'm just stoked what's going on. I'm not going to question it for now.
We almost had to go back and watch the Georgia tape and, like, receiver dropping the ball. Like, what was the deal in that game? Or is this just kind of like a two-game fluke that he's not going to be able to replicate? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, really, I really just hope that, like, the coaching staff sat down and was like, hey, we're going to dumb down some stuff here in terms of the offense, and you're just going to start taking the outlet throws. And I really hope that's what they did, because that's what it looks like they did. And it's been working really well for 2 weeks. I just hope Cade remembers that.
Yeah, or is NC State just like the NC State and App State have been getting blown out by pretty much?
They're both awful teams. They're both awful teams.
Yeah, like on paper, you know, because of their history, I think we think of them as their better teams than they are. They are both horrendous, but not to discredit Cade and what he's done. Last quarterback, Miller Moss. Michigan was a tough test. You know, we I think because of how easy it looked for Texas on the road, we were like, oh, they can't play, but maybe Texas, who's ranked number one in the country, is just not bad. And USC went in there. How do you think that Miller Moss looked?
I think he actually looked all right. There was one really bad. So the interception, obviously, to Will Johnson, that's the pick six. That's not really like a multi-read play. That's kind of a pre-designed throw for him. And Will Johnson just makes a really incredible read, I feel like, unless that's with that coverage and all that. So it's not, I'm not putting too much on Miller Moss for that play, although maybe you don't design the Will Johnson side of the field in the future. Maybe try to get something mixed up to not have something like that happen. The first, there was an almost interception early on in the game, though, where it was bobbled by one Michigan defender, bobbled by another, and dropped. That was a horrendous throw. I felt like that Moss was maybe testing too many tight throwing lanes for a player. Like, he's got a decent arm, but not anywhere near like the NFL caliber stuff we talk about with a lot of these quarterbacks. And I felt like he was testing too many really tight throwing lanes. That made me nervous a bit with how he was approaching it. But yeah, this was a Shedeur Sanders level type game in terms of the pressures. He was pressured on 24 dropbacks. This guy dropped back 55 times. So basically half the time he was getting pressured. Now I did the breakdown for the defensive line. They were all over him. Like, the offensive line for USC was getting destroyed. Every one of them, sometimes even ending up literally on their faces because of how overpowered Michigan's defensive line was. But for a guy like Moss, who is sort of like the Jared Goff of college football right now, in terms of the ace, a pocket passer who makes poor decisions when you heat him up more often, it was an okay game. I feel like this is still a day three quarterback, in my opinion. I'm not talking about him being more than that right now. There were some moments you can hang your head on in terms of some nice plays, some nice throws that he made, especially on the down the right sideline a couple of times. I feel like he had some nice plays. That one touchdown between like two Michigan defenders was really nice. But yeah, I just think you saw the lacking level of athleticism to really create when he's under pressure, which he was under pressure frequently in this game. And then occasionally he forces throws because he feels so pressured to get the ball out, because he knows he can't run away and can't create second chance opportunities. Yeah, this just reinforced me. He's a day three quarterback. I'm not knocking him too much because of how dominant Michigan's defense was in this game. But I do think we need to, if you're someone who's like hyping you up as a day two kind of player, you really need to think about some of the limitations he has in this game.
Miller Moss, Cade Klubnik, Kyle McCord, after the 2026 draft, like when's that done? Who's going to have been the highest drafted of the three?
Oh, man. I'll go with McCord. I'll go with McCord right now because I feel like it wasn't good at LSU, but it wasn't like Cade Klubnik levels of bad from like 2023. So I think that like McCord goes first. I'll take Moss second and Cade three because I just don't want to blame Cade right now until he does it for the entire season. I need to keep seeing it for now. I do think there's some legit level to Miller Moss, but again, there's just so many limitations built into his game right now because of the lack of athleticism he has because he doesn't have that elite arm. So I think that really showed up in this game. But hey, you know, some pocket passers are in vogue right now. If you've got an Andy Dalton, you've got a Joe Flacco on your bench, a Geno Smith or a Brock Purdy, you know, those seem to be working out right now. So maybe it won't be such a hindrance in the NFL, but in college, definitely not having the mobility is hurting Miller Moss right now.
So you're saying Miller Moss is Brock Purdy? No, I'm kidding. That was just more fun with the combo. Of course, I think he ends up being the highest rate. I'll take Cade Klubnik so I can say you're a Clemson hater. All right, biggest risers from the week, list of guys we went through, similar amount last week. A lot of repeat names. We'll start with a repeat. Braden Swinson from LSU. He made it after his performance against South Carolina. He remade your list of risers for the week. What made you put him on the list again?
Yeah, I don't like doing repeats this close together, but guys like him and then Harold Fenton, who I had as a riser after he played Penn State earlier this year, they just played so well and so high above the expectations that I had to include both of them over again. Swinson was really dominant against UCLA. And you saw from the first snap, the power in his hands pop again, the ability to really knock back offensive tackles and create an opening in that B gap. But what really jumped out to me was I thought he was winning with more bend this week and more like explosiveness to his game. And closing speed and turning the outside corner not so much as in previous week, he had been winning through the B gap and trying to widen that B gap with power. This week, it felt like he was winning more to the outside with just like that speed and burst. And if you can do both those, I'll be very excited for his NFL projection because he does have good measurables, I think, for the position. Maybe not the best run defender in the world, but I think good enough to get by. This guy going into the 2022 season, so like August of 2022, I actually remember writing this guy up as like a breakout candidates column. He was in there back in Oregon because I liked this tape from like 2021. I thought he could be a breakout player for them. And that just didn't materialize. But now it feels like we're really getting a massive season from him. Look, South Carolina UCLA's offensive tackles are not very good. Those teams are not very good right now, at least in terms of the offensive line play. But he's been so dominant the past couple weeks. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find an edge rusher in college football who's outperformed Braden Swinson in the past two games.
Will he make an appearance in your top 150?
It's going to be 200, but he will be up there. Like he's going to be pretty high, and it's still a filling out period because we're 4 weeks in, which is just not a large enough sample size to really draw a ton of solid conclusions, but yeah, there'll be some big shakeups, and he'll definitely be a big time riser.
I like to hear that. Joshua Farmer finally gets to talk about a Florida State player who played well. He had a dominant performance, from what I saw. How did you think he fared that made you put him on the list?
Yeah, I went back and I saw the numbers. I saw the box score first before I saw the tape, and I was like, "Oh, him, Marvin Jones Jr., and Patrick Payton combined for 9 tackles for loss, 6 sacks." I was like, "Oh, this is going to be a dominant game from all three. Finally, we get some overall good tape." And you go back and Patrick Payton's getting cleanup sacks. Just the guys are running away from Josh Farmer, essentially. Like Josh Farmer's chasing dudes and chasing the quarterback into Patrick Payton on most of those plays. So a lot of nice cleanup sacks for Patrick Payton. But Farmer, I thought, was just so dominant working downhill. Like you could see the difference in agility and just explosiveness between him and the guard because he was way too quick for them to even get hands on half the time. There was even a play where they line him up on the edge and he actually like dipped around the outside from like a 5-tech roll. Like, oh gosh, I wrote down in the summer how like I thought the bend was impressive, but his ability to do that, I was just blown away. To be able to do that and actually make an impact on the play itself from that wide of an alignment with his build was really impressive to me. And he still doesn't anchor at the point of attack really well, which is disappointing, obviously, because I feel like if he could just do that, we're looking at a really complete player. But his ability to be a penetrating 3-tech, create disruption in the backfield in both the run and pass game is excellent. And he popped numerous times in this game. I think there's probably, I could point to probably 7 or 8 plays where you see he was just dominant. You don't get that many plays from guys in games like this. So massive night from him. He was outstanding.
Yeah, he did very, very well. Are you leaving him in your top 100?
Yeah, I think he saved himself here. Like, I was really starting to give him the eyeballs. I was trying to put together a doc today. Because obviously there's so many changes between the August one and the September one because of all the players who are doing really good and all the players doing really bad. So I was putting together, like, who do I need to add in here and who do I need to take out? And I was looking at who do you drop out of the top 100? And Farmer really saved himself with his performance this past week, I think.
No, he killed it. Next guy, I'm glad you included him, David Bailey, the pass rusher from Stanford, who I think is one of the more underrated players in the country. Has produced pretty much every year he's been in college and had a really good night on Friday against Stanford.
Yeah, he doesn't. I don't think he technically gets starts per se, because I know he might be listed as a starter on our lads, but PFF doesn't list him as like the starter per se. He kind of rotates in, but he's a really explosive athlete. You look at his bend and just how quickly he gets off the ball. He's a little bit lean, I would say. You know, he's listed at 250. I think it's probably closer to 240. But when you look at where the league values players who could be designated pass rushers early in their career and then eventually develop into full-time rushers, like, Bailey has all the traits you want from a guy who can be that DPR early. And maybe he just stays a DPR, but still makes a ton of money in the NFL because they value that third pass rusher now very much so in terms of having that rotation up front. I do think this is a player who probably goes back for one more year, if I had to bet, because he's still a relatively young prospect. But overall, the terms of athlete he has, in terms of like the explosiveness, the speed, the bend and dip in his hips and ankles to really flex around the edge and be able to do like ghost moves and all kind of stuff as a college player is incredible. And he had just a dominant night, like 5 pressures, a sack, and a strip sack. I was hoping they would play him more often, frankly, honestly. Like, he didn't play a ton of snaps in this game. And based on the night he was having, I would just throw him out there and left him out there to play the entire game. Like, he was really good. And he has, again, all the tools that you're looking for in this kind of player.
You think he is a third round DPR or more of a guy who goes fourth, fifth, and you're hoping to develop?
So that kind of goes to how much you think he can defend the run. And to be honest with you, I didn't see a lot of plays in this game where he actually was, one, asked to defend the run, or two, made much of an impact in the run game. So I think that you're probably looking at more of a day three guy, I would say, like early day three player, because I don't know you're gonna leave him out there rundowns per se. But then again, the Eagles gave Bryce up a massive extension. He's a guy who doesn't defend the run at all, as they're finding out right now. So
yeah, but I was about to say,
you know, you can make a lot of money as just a pass rusher. And look, like, you know, Ngakoue just signed with someone today, I'm pretty sure. I think Baltimore just signed him for like the third or fourth time. So you can be a pass rusher and make it for a long time in the NFL. Bailey has the athletic tools where he could be the type of player, maybe transcends that role and ends up being a third round pick. But it really comes down to like an individual NFL team being willing to draft him, understanding the fact that he's probably never going to be above average run defender in the league.
No, I thought a lot about that. I was like, is he, you know, because Nick Benito went 64. I was like, I think Benito's just tools were a lot better than his. And I was like, kind of, I would see like early fourth round would be probably a good spot. But it's so tough with these guys. Mo Camara, we thought draft night, he's going third round. He went in the fifth. So, it's hit or miss there. John Michael Gillenborg. I was like, I don't think he's going to put him on there. I was like, should I tell him he should watch it? I was like, I don't know. Played really well. Basically, his first game, played 9 snaps, I think, against BYU because of ankle injury. Side note, that quarterback, wide receiver, the whole offense, not good. He played really well, though.
Yeah, I mean, they scheme up a touch from it early in the game. You see he's running, and it takes about, 30, 40 yards for a cornerback to chase him down. Like, he really has that level of speed. It's actually a safety for North Texas, but his ability to create off those scheme touches is fantastic, but he doesn't need to create off scheme touches. It's just the offense can't get in the ball otherwise because the offense is so bad. He is a really unique athlete at the tight end position. He's a good blocker as well. You can use him in line. You can use him in the slot. just a very unique athlete. And a guy was young in terms of experience to football and exposure to the game itself. But he is a player I still value as a top 100 guy. The injuries have certainly hurt him because he hasn't been able to go out there and really showcase himself yet this season. Thankfully, there's still a lot of games left for him to do that. Just in terms of what he does athletically as a playmaker, I think he is one of the most athletic tens in this class and one of the most well-rounded guys, because I don't look at, obviously, guys like Jake Burningstool or Colson Loveland as being the level of guy he is in terms of playing inline, outside, H-back. Like, those guys can't do all that stuff, but Dylan Ward can, and he can do it quite well.
Yeah, he was, you know, I didn't know how he'd come back off the ankle. And, I first watched his targets and or you know, whatever it may be. And first play, they're giving him a scheme touch, but even like just running his routes, like he looks really fast out there. He looks fast, he looks explosive, pretty fluid. I was impressed. I did not watch his blocking snaps, though. I was a little lazy, so I don't know anything about how he did as a blocker. But I was like, let me see how he looks as a receiving threat. And I thought he stood out. This guy's on our list every single way. Quickly on Gillenborg, you said top 100. I felt like he kind of looks like a third round tight end. Kind of like that's how he looked last night. I don't know if you, or a couple nights ago. I don't know if you disagree.
Yeah, but you go out and grab him in that Tucker Kraft range and he ends up being a top two tight end in the class. Like that's just how it works right now. I think you go out and get him there and you'll have a chance to be the best tight end in a couple of years from the draft.
Yeah, no, he's got a lot of upside. Anto Saka, repeat offender. He's always on this list. I watched his 16 snaps. It was like, holy smokes, he did it again. How did you think he played?
Yeah, I mean, they're basically using him as a DPR in college already. We talked a little about David Bailey in terms of where he could play and like where he could get drafted. If you're talking about like a DPR that gets taken in the third round, take this guy. Just go ahead and do it. Saka is, to me, the most explosive edge rusher I've seen so far in terms mm-hmm. of evaluations for this class. Just a really freakish athlete. I don't think he's got superb length. I don't think he's got maybe as much weight as you want, but the ability to just constantly make tackles look silly with how quickly he's able to explode, redirect, and bend, it's phenomenal. And this guy, I don't think I gave him enough credit for just being an athletic freak in the summer. I thought I said he's an above-average guy, but he's more than that. He's just a freakish player. A sack he had where he basically just pops up the line and goes right through the B gap immediately versus the left tackle for Washington. I mean, he's just such a talented player, and tackles are now trying to overset to counter him on the outside, which is opening up B gap opportunities. I really do wish they would play him 30 snaps a game just to see what that looks like instead of giving him like this 18 to 22 snaps a game, which is kind of frustrating, but he is a superb athlete. And while he still needs to develop more of a pass rush plan, I think he's good enough where he can survive with the athletic tools. And he has enough of a plan to get by. Like I look at someone like Abdul Carter, who doesn't have much of a plan right now, but he's an athletic freak. I think Saka has more of a plan, and you see that make a greater impact for him right now versus Carter, who's just as freaky as Saka, but doesn't have that level of pass rush experience.
How big of a gap? Like, take me through him versus Jalen Walker.
Ooh, okay, interesting. Walker is a much more refined pass rusher in terms of his hand usage and his pass rush plan in arsenal. He has probably double the moves that Saka does at this point in time. And obviously you're looking at some linebacker level versatility with Walker. Now, he doesn't have the instincts to play linebacker really right now, in my opinion, but he has the level of athletic traits to play that position and play impactfully. And also I think Walker is, to me, is a better run defender. He's just, again, these Georgia linebackers or outside linebackers undersized, but for some reason you can't move him off the line. Kind of the Nolan Smith type dude. Saka's still a good run defender, but I don't think quite the same level. Granted, you know, we wouldn't know because he never gets a chance to defend the run anymore. but I do think I have Walker ranked higher. If you're asking me just from a pure edge rusher standpoint, I'd probably go Walker because I like the guys who have the moves already developed. You know, I'm a big, like, Laiatu Latu kind of guy over. Or some like Tyreek Williams, like I'd rather have the Latu type player. But Saka is going to be a top 100 player for me on my next big board. And whether that's realistic or not, I don't really care. He's just that good that I feel like I need to acknowledge that. I would rather be early and wrong than be late and right.
Yeah, here's the thing is, he was nicked up because he missed the week before. I couldn't find an injury because in college, you don't have to disclose anything. And it's not like there's a ton of beat reporters saying, why isn't Saka out there against Eastern Illinois for Northwestern? But then they put him in. His first play against Washington's a sack, right? Like, are they trying to hide him? We have this conversation every week. Is Northwestern think they are hiding him by just playing him as a backup? He's not a bad run defender at all. And I mean, I don't actually, because I only watch him. Like, they don't have another prospect on defense that I can think of. But their other edge rushers, like, can't be that much better of run defenders than him, that he's worth not playing him double the snap. He's so explosive. His bend's way better than it was last year. Like, his bend's taking a jump.
Yeah.
You know, he's consistently getting after the quarterback. You watch the All-22. Because, like, the broadcast, you're like, holy smokes, he's fast. And then you watch the All-22. I've said holy smokes like six times this podcast. Wait, and then you watch the All-22, and you're like, wow. Like, this is next-level explosiveness that you don't see. And he's still so young, and he's only played so many snaps, and he's been so productive in those limited snaps. Do you think you'll end up higher? How much higher do you think you'll end up on him than Austin Booker?
Oh, a good margin, I think, at this point, because Saka has that athletics, that extra level of athleticism to his game, where Booker was all right, but just had the weirdest frame in the world. Like, he looked like his legs were almost kind of bowed a little bit in terms of how he moved. So Booker lived on the Texas tape a lot for me. I think Saka's living week to week here and doing quite well for himself. So I think that he'll be ranked higher in the long term. Maybe only like, what did I give Booker? A fourth round, a third round? Like, he's not going to be that much higher than that. Maybe half a round difference, because Booker was already in a good spot, I think. But I will like him more than Booker, and I would draft him higher than Booker because of how freakish he is as an athlete. And they're not doing a great job of hiding him, because James Foster found him and made a tweet about him the other day. And once James finds you in the free draft process, he's going to keep on you throughout the year. So they're not going to escape this. They're trying to hide him.
No, yeah, he's really good. Another undersized, well, I wouldn't call Saka as undersized as Mike Green is, the pass rusher from Marshall, who had a sack against Ohio State. Good spin move on Josh Fryer, the right tackle, not Josh Simmons, the left tackle, who we're huge fans of. So how did you think he played, and what made you put him on the list?
Yeah, I included him in big time players making big time plays section, which is really just the section for me to call out one or two plays for a guy each game. I don't really want to, like, they didn't play well enough to really have their names mentioned in the risers column, but I did want to throw them out there because something they did that I really liked. And Mike Green, that spin move was phenomenal. It was an excellent spin move. I think everything about that play was great. I wish I could say the rest of the game for Marshall as a whole, because it was just a horrendous game for them. Run defense, I think, is always going to be a bit of a concern for Mike Green because of the size difference between him and the offensive tackles. We brought this up in a bit during our summer evaluation for him. He's just not going to anchor that point of attack super well right now. And you saw it with that whole Marshall front and how easy it was for Ohio State to run the ball against them. Much more difficult to throw the ball, but so credit to the secondary there. But Green had a pretty meh, they all said, like, didn't really make as much impact as was hoping for a top 100 player. He had been a fringe top 100 guy for me in the past. I think I'll dock him a few spots, but it'll still be a top 120, I would say. But I don't think he's secure in the top 100 right now, because he made one really impactful play, but I don't think we had much else to hang our hats on from this game, so I'm gonna kind of leave it at that. But still a good player. I still think he can rebound and he can test super well and can be a top 100 pick, but not the performance I was hoping for against a really prominent team. And probably, I think, the last quality team that we're going to see Marshall face this year that has NFL caliber offensive tackles.
Yeah, that's the tough thing, is you only get so many opportunities when you're at Marshall to go up against next level tackles. You know, he's going to look awesome throughout the rest of the schedule. He's probably going to have multiple sacks in a bunch of different games against guys who won't play in the NFL. So it's kind of hard to gauge with an undersized rusher. Tyler Warren threw a touchdown, ran for 16 yards, had a one-handed catch on the sideline. It was Kent State, so like I'm not like I'm not asking you to be like how good of that was that performance. Just talk to me though a little bit overall of how you think he's fared just this season in general.
Yeah, he's been a top 30 player for me for a while now, and he's done nothing to shake my confidence in him right now. It's so nice to see them finally featuring him. All they had to do was chase away their transfers at wide receiver to get him to go out there and be a feature player. And then get all the other Titans to graduate. He finally gets a chance to play as a feature piece of the offense, and he's just so much better than everyone else. Like, I just don't know why this guy wasn't getting the targets last year. He is so much better than Theo Johnson or anyone else that they had through this program for a while now. But you go and look at his play against Kent State. Again, it's not a high-level program, but you can go back and look at his play so far against other opponents that were better. He's just a superb athlete and one of the most well-rounded players at this position. I think I put down scheme diverse in terms of what scheme fit would be best for him in the NFL. To me, he is this true scheme diverse player who can play halfback for you. He can play on trick plays. He can be in the wildcat. He can be in line. He can be in the slot. He can do all this stuff for you. And again, like there's guys like Colson Loveland, Jake Brittany School can't do that. I don't think Terrence Ferguson can do all that at a high level. So to me, Tyler Warren, if you're looking for the more complete play, most complete tight end in this class, it's Tyler Warren right now. And he, again, top 30 player on my board. He's going to stay there. He might even move up quite a bit. But he's been phenomenal this year. And I'm so glad they're finally giving him the target share he deserves.
Your tight end one 2023 class, Luke Musgrave, who you taking?
Warren. I think I'm taking Tyler Warren.
Yeah. No, he's been very good this year. Because we can't even talk. He's not better than Bowers, obviously. No one is. But then your tight end, we say that about every tight end in this class. Oh, he would have been tight end two last year.
Yeah, I'd flaw like the consensus that Loveland is tight end one this year. I don't disagree with that. But I do think the gap between tight end one and tight end two is much smaller than people have acknowledged at this point.
Who was your tight end two last year? I can't remember.
Oh, shoot. After Bowers?
Yeah, I can't remember. So not...
Hold on, give me 1 second.
Theo Johnson. I think...
Did I have... that's right. This was a terrible tight end class. Did I have Sanat tight end too? I mean, I have these guys like in the 80s and 90s maybe, so I'm not entirely sure that... Whoever it was not... Definitely not even in the second round.
Yeah, I can't...
It might have ended up being... Sanders or Sanat or Theo Johnson, I think.
So, all right. Do you think you'll end up higher on John Michael Gillenborg than Theo Johnson or Sanat?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm already there. Yeah. I am already about like 20 spots higher, 20, 30 spots higher than there was with those guys. So, yeah, I'm there.
So funny. But yeah, good to hear that on him. Michigan defensive line. Last one we want to talk about. They were all over Miller Moss all day. Quick thoughts. I guess one like DN through the other DN, 1 through 4. How would they fare in your opinion?
Yeah, Josiah Stewart, most impactful player on the field yesterday in terms of his ability to just constantly win around the edge. He can't run the B gap occasionally, but his speed and explosiveness was just in a tier by itself throughout the course of this game. We had this conversation with him about him over the summer. He just seems to win and win a lot for some reason, even though he's so small and short and doesn't have long arms. He just wins. And we saw again, even in the run game too today, like he just seems to win constantly. I don't think teams will be willing to bet on that as much as you and I maybe, but this is a top 100 player because he just wins and I'm willing to bet on that. He just finds ways to succeed. Excellent game from him. Derek Moore on the other side had probably the best game I've ever seen him play. You know, I'm not really high on Derek Moore as a prospect, but this was a really good game from him in terms of his own speed and explosiveness and his B gap counters and rips and being able to finish. Really good two-handed swipes as well to give him some free access to the quarterback. Club swimming there too. The best game I've seen him play to this point. Mason Graham, I feel bad for Jonah Monheim. Monheim was a guy I was thinking about being a significant riser for the first couple of weeks, and then this game happened. And Monheim was on his face a couple times in this game because of Mason Graham. So he single-handedly negated me moving Monheim that far up my board because of how dominant he was. And you just see a couple reps for it. Again, this hasn't been the year I was really hoping for from Graham so far. He's still my top player, but I was hoping for a bit more from him. This was by far his best game so far of the year. And Kenneth Grant, you know, the guy's a bit of a tweener to some extent in terms of he's a good run defender, but not great. He's a capable pass rusher, but not take over the game kind of player in terms of pass rushing. But you saw that USC did not have a player who could really move him at all in this game. That freakish quickness he has for his size really showed up, because even the guys who are smaller for USC could not really match his movement right now on the inside. And again, power, again, the power mismatch by all these guys, or at least by Graham and Grant against the USC offensive line, was significant. I can't even describe how much of a one-sided battle it was.
No, they were, you know, top to bottom, all four of them were really good. They were the reason they won that game outside, you know, they and Will Johnson and the running back Khalil Mullings, who also made your list, who I think is going to be a legitimate running back in this class. Donovan Edwards, no matter what, can't be the featured back. They put him on the cover of the video game. It's his offense, and it's Mullings. How about Michigan also winning that game through 31 passing yards? Colston Loveland wasn't in, which I don't think he would have helped them. Like, I don't think he adds any value to this team.
No, if you can't complete the pass, there's no point in having him out there.
Yeah, this is
the quarterback can get in the ball.
I can't believe they won that game. They're gonna lose like a couple in there, because like eventually the offense isn't just gonna like the defense just won't be able to, you know, do everything. And you know, Mullings, if he doesn't, you know, the amount of tackles he broke to get them down the field, it's so painful to watch. You know, this is a premier program in college football. And I'd take, you know, Wyoming's offense over them. No, I'm kidding. But it's close enough that that's how bad it is. It's set, like, their old lines.
This is Iowa. This is Iowa's offense. Yeah. This is Iowa.
This is literally Iowa. I'd take Iowa's offense over their offense. No doubt. Like, there is no doubt in my mind that running back number 9 is a stud. They've got a better offensive line. They have better weapons, because Lashley and their other tight end, I would take over, you know, Michigan's, you know, outside of Loveland. So that's sad to say, but Iowa's got a better offense than Michigan this year. I was like, oh, maybe they needed J.J. McCarthy. It's like, he had 5 starting offensive linemen last year leave, right? Like, everything they had at wide receiver-wise left. Like, they just had, you know, Blake Corum, their top running back, left. So, you know, obviously McCarthy was very important, but, you know, they just lost everything. So, makes sense. Yeah, that was the riser for the week. Now, prospects watched. Savion Williams, wide receiver at TCU. Malachi Starks, the safety at Georgia. Nick Singleton, running back at Penn State. And Alfred Collins, defensive tackle at Texas. We'll start with Williams, the next wide receiver in line after Quentin Johnston for TCU. How did you end up grading him out?
Yeah, I gave him like a mid-day through grade. He's a superb athlete, I think, for to move the way he does at his size, because he's listed at 6'5", 225. And even with that 6'4", 220, he's still a fantastic mover at that size. And some of the athletic feats supposedly he's done, like the explosiveness on his broad jump, his vertical jump, how much he lifts, like that's all great. Supposedly he clocked 22.5 miles per hour over the summer. That's all phenomenal. I just don't see, I see an athlete, but not a receiver a lot of times. Like it's, and it doesn't help that TCU's offense is so far on the college side of the spectrum, as far as like NFL to college offenses, but like TCU is putting him in motion pre-snap a lot of times, or motioning him out of the backfield to get him to kind of build up so he's coming off the line quickly, because his normal release is not that explosive. It's not consistent in terms of that sense. He's way too big of a target for press coverage, and he doesn't dodge press coverage very well at this point in time. Takes too much contact. He does separate a bit on like short to intermediate comebacks and curls, because he does have surprising foot quickness and ability to decelerate and turn those routes, but I don't see a natural separator on most of his plays. And he doesn't have a developed route tree for the most part. Once you take away those scheme touches, I really think it's just like contested go balls mostly for him. Like it's not a, there's no intermediate routes for this player right now. There's no middle of the field stuff really developed for him, maybe besides shallow crossers. There's just not a lot to his NFL caliber route tree right now. And if you looked at Quentin Johnson struggling as much as he did early in his time in the NFL, now maybe it's worked out at this point because he's got somehow 3 touchdowns in the past 2 weeks. But if Quentin Johnson struggled that much, I look at Savion Williams, who does even less NFL stuff right now. And I just think it'd be a very long road for him, and a very like a multi-year process for him to get to the NFL caliber situation you want him to be. And because of that, he's a mid fifth round player for me at this point in time. Could be a sixth round player even. Again, really good athlete. I think the NFL will take him higher than that. But just for me, I don't see an NFL wide receiver at this point. I just see a really good athlete. To his credit, he is a monster at the catch point. Legitimately turns 50-50 balls into 70-30. Like, he is fantastic. He's big. He's tall. He's strong. Long arms. He jumps high. It's all there to be a great contested catch receiver. And he's got good power to him as well, but not superb power. He's got decent acceleration too. You look at like the top speed. I don't doubt his top speed is 22.5 miles per hour. I just think it takes too long to get there for it to really matter sometimes in yak situations and on downfield routes. He is a player to me who will have to live at the catch point in the NFL and doesn't have the developed route tree for me to really feel comfortable putting him in the top 100 right now.
I thought he was a day three guy as well. I thought he was over the summer. Nothing of the tape from this year has made me feel that would need to change. It is like there are a lot of similarities, just like looks wise, to Quentin Johnson's, like, you know, bigger version almost. I don't think Quentin Johnson, who has played better this year so far than anything he did last year, but just like coming from that offense, that team, their lack of success at wide receiver in the draft, I do not think that will help him a ton. But yeah, I think the league's going to be higher on him than we are. Malachi Starks, safety at Georgia. Let's hear your thoughts if this is going to be controversial or not.
Yeah, you'll be stunned. I have a first round grade on Malachi Starks. What a shocker. No, he's the most versatile safety in this class. His football IQ and range and zone are great, but his coverage skills and press and off-man coverage are what really set him apart. When you talk about the level of versatility you get from players like Kyle Hamilton or Brian Branch, I'm not saying he's maybe as loose as a Brian Branch per se, but I do think this guy falls into like that class of players who can play so many different roles for your defense as like listed as a safety, but you can play a nickel role every now and then. You can play down the box. You can play some single high stuff. He can do that for you. He's great at the catch point, forcing completions with heavy contact and toward his body for high flying interceptions. He's just so versatile, and the ability to play that many different roles at an elite level is just rare for safeties. Easy top 10 talent, top 15 talent in this class for me. The only concerns I have with him is he kind of lacks, I'll say, elite vertical speed. I know his testing numbers are supposedly very good, but I just felt like he didn't have the best speed at times. He will overcommit to the release when he's in press coverage or soft shoe press. He will overcommit to like early steps in the release, kind of put himself in a bad position. So he needs to be a bit more poised in those situations. He will bite on route fix. So some of that man coverage stuff that, you know, corners develop over time because they have so many reps. I think he's a little bit raw in that sense. I think his footwork in those situations and off man is maybe not great. Like, he lets himself get blown past a little bit too much because his footwork just is not setting him up to reach that top speed quickly enough to stick with receivers who are pressing vertically at times. He's not a guy who I want to have like his back to the quarterback very often. I like him much more facing the quarterback and playing the ball that way. I wish he was more impactful in the run game. I think he gets stuck on blocks a little bit too often. He's willing to be a heavy hitter coming downhill, but he gets stuck on blocks a little bit too often for me. And he takes some really bad angles to the ball, like some really steep angles he just can't do. That's really it. I mean, everything else is fantastic. You can play him almost anywhere on the field and he'll be successful.
Do you think... I don't know where you had him. Did you have him in the teens or was he top 10 in August?
I think he was top 10, I'm pretty sure.
You see some people say...
If he wasn't,
like,
I refuse to acknowledge it.
Yeah. So you had him top 10 over the summer, obviously. But you hear some stuff like he's the best player in the draft. Do you feel like he could get to that point or be there, or is he more in that 5 to 10 range?
I think he's more in the 5 to 10 range because I look at guys like Will Johnson, who's hopefully okay medically in terms of, like, yeah, I know he left the game against USC, but I look at Will Johnson and I look at Travis Hunter. I just think those guys are better players right now. But if you want to say he start, like, the conversation maybe starts at 4 or 5 for Malachi Starks. I think that's where it's at. Because, you know, I like Mr. Greg Pratt a lot, but Graham with the short arms and the undersized build, it's not going to be for everybody. So if we're being really picky, probably the conversation starts at maybe 3. I can't see putting Starks above Will Johnson or Travis Hunter in that conversation.
Do you think he ends up as a better prospect for you than Kyle Hamilton or no?
I was so high in Kyle Hamilton. I had Kyle Hamilton like top five locked for the entirety of the process.
Yeah, no. Look smart by doing that. Next guy up, we have Nick Singleton, running back at Penn State.
Yeah, I'm going to have him above. I think I've had him below Martin Hampton every time I've done a big board so far. But I think I'm going to have him both above Hampton and maybe even above Ollie Gordon. I have to really... The Ollie Gordon situation has been really bizarre so far. Yeah, so I got to watch. I hate to say this. I hate to do this myself, but I have to watch some Oklahoma State tape to figure out what's going on there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to have Nick Singleton move up quite a bit because I know last year was obviously very disappointing. There's been some stuff there with maybe like the vision's not great. He's a little bit stiff per se. Doesn't have a lot of open field wiggle or looseness. I get all that. Maybe not, you know, some of that tightness is in the hips because he's so, I'll say, muscular, but not as nearly as like muscle bound and as stiff as Amari and Hampton. To me, this is a late second round to mid third round type player, maybe even a mid second round type player. He's an insane level athlete, really explosive, able to be a receiver out of the backfield. He's good in pass protection as well. He's an every down player. And I think he could be a lead back in the NFL right now. If you want, and I know there's a lot of committees, maybe he's the lead back in a committee per se, but I do think he could be like a primary running back for an NFL team as a rookie going forward. I do think he has some visions, some lapses in vision where he misses cutback lanes, and his patience fluctuates. Sometimes he's too patient. Sometimes he's not patient enough. Doesn't seem to have really found the middle ground for that yet. But in terms of what he does well with the nice lateral agility for jump cuts, he's being more patient this year. His vision, I think, has been better this year. And just the sheer burst and explosiveness he has to get through narrow gaps and accelerate to the defense's third level and then erase some pursuit angles and then finish the big plays with that long speed. I don't think there's many running backs who have the combination to really match this in this year's draft. I mean, Ashton Jeanty is my RB1, but obviously he's much smaller. He's much built much differently than someone like Nick Singleton is. But Singleton will have a chance in being that RB2 for me this year, I believe.
Would you take him over Jonathan Brooks?
That's tough. So Singleton's a better athlete, but Brooks, I just felt, was so much more polished and consistent in his play. So I think I would have Brooks higher.
Got it. No, it's a good running back class. We still got to do the Ohio State guys. I'm glad you did Singleton. Did you watch, were you able to catch any of, is Katron Allen, you know, I haven't done much work on the Penn State running back.
Yeah, I've watched him here or there. He's just not as explosive per se. If you're looking for like a, maybe like a Tyler Allgeier kind of guy, I think he could be more of that for you. A bit of a rumbler, 4 yards in a cloud of dust type guy, but like a little bit better than that, obviously. But also good in pass pro, by the way, Katron Allen. Lots of decent running backs in pass pro this year.
No, yeah, you hear everyone, you know, within the league, outside the league, Jeanty's one, but I think number two is wide open. Singleton could definitely be that guy, right? You know, we still, Ollie Gordon, you know, hasn't, I don't think he's rushed for 50 yards this year, right? Like, this is getting to the point where this is Raheem Sanders territory of, is he just not good?
I think it really is Jeanty, Judkins, and Singleton for me right now in terms of like the three. And then it's like, will Ollie Gordon show up at all this year? Maybe. And then you kind of get into the, okay, we got Travion Henderson, who's your speedster. You got Martin Hampton, who's your hammer. Like, you kind of get into the more spilled specific type guys after that.
No, there's just way more depth than last year. I think outside of Jeanty, though, it's not as top heavy as maybe we initially thought. Last prospect, Alfred Collins, defensive tackle at Texas. I don't know where you're at on him, but I've wanted him to be good for 5 years. Let's see if he reached that point.
I remember talking about this guy last year when we were doing the defensive tackles. And I was like, there's this guy on Texas who's got all the tools in the world, but has no idea what he's doing.
Did he figure it out?
Collins, mate. No, he didn't. Look, I gave him a fourth round grade just because I don't think, like, the way I put this I don't think I wrote this down, but to me, this is a fifth round player with top 50 caliber traits. Now, granted, there was one of those guys this past draft, and the Jaguars took him like where, the second round?
48 or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, granted, the Jaguars might not be around to do that again this year, because who knows what's going to happen with that front office at this point. But like, this guy has everything you want tools wise. He's like 6'5, 320. 35 1/4 inch arms. I think Nagy tweeted out the measurements last year with 6'5 1/4, 307. He's heavier this year, I think. 35 1/4 inch arms. And he, like, they play him everywhere from zero tech to five tech. And he can line up everywhere and be an impactful player. You know, he is, he has everything you could want, possibly. And he's got a good burst, a good explosive athlete, really good power. Like, this has got everything you could want if you line it all up. But my God, like, the pad level is inconsistent. He doesn't use his arms. Like, doesn't maximize that length at all. The hand usage is all over the place. He lets guys get into his frame way too consistently. He doesn't use his pass rush plan often enough. He doesn't have a deep pass rush plan at this point in time. You know, it's just there's some stiffness as Bowman trying to bend, but like, that's fine at 6'5". It's not really a big deal. He doesn't dominate one-on-one blocks the way you want him to in the run game. Doesn't really anchor the point of attack at a high level versus like multiple offensive players, despite having the size to do it. And then doesn't have great speed in the open field. Way too many missed tackles as well. And a lot of unfinished plays, but he'll get into the backfield and he'll just not make the tackle. In terms of pass rush plan, speed to power, two-arm bull rush, swipes, swims, rips, club rips. He's working on a spin move. It has not been successful even once so far at this point in time. But maybe eventually he'll get there. Maybe another 5 years from now, he'll get it. Really powerful arm extensions to pry the guard's pad level up. And you see him dip his inside shoulder, and he will get below there. He will dip, and he will bend a little bit to him. For a guy that size, it's pretty unique. He does set a reliable edge as a five tech. He will bend his knees and anchor with a Y base to hold the point of attack versus the run. I think he does have impressive for body power to really shock single blockers and do push-pull moves as well. And again, those long arms are really good for stacking, peaking, and shedding in the run game. And surprisingly, he's good at splitting double teams. Like, when he can't anchor versus double teams, but he's actually good at splitting them for some reason and getting, like, being a penetrating player that way. But every box is checked, and I just don't think he has... I don't want to call it football IQ, because I just don't know what it is. He just has not developed into a day two player, in my opinion.
No, he never has. And I think he's going to be an important one, which NFL teams kind of, you know, you look at the body type, you're like, oh, that's the guy I want to draft in the first round. His tape suggests, you know, he should be drafted, as you said, four rounds later than that. So we got to get under the hood here. Speaking with coaches, strength and conditioning coach, head coach, defensive coordinator, position coach, you know, everyone who's been involved, like, why has this kid never been good? And it could be like 3 years he was dealing with something in his foot that, you know, kind of like hurt his development, or he doesn't show up to practice, or he's just not good at football. Like, there's a reasoning, right? Like, Mason Smith, they did as much mental gymnastics as they could to take him as high as they did. Someone will do enough mental gymnastics to take this guy in the third round. You would take him probably in the fourth, but I think he goes in the third round off of zero production, because you get picks 80 through 100. And it's like, yeah, someone's going to take this year's Mason Smith there.
Yeah, you might as well take, if you're going to take Cameron Lasu there, with they did a couple, like San Francisco did a couple of years ago, why not just take Alfred Collins instead?
Why not just take him over Jake Moody? Who knows, you know, maybe he can kick better than Jake Moody.
Yeah, why not just not take a kicker?
So really, San Francisco, you better take this guy in the third round. No, Alfred Collins, a perfect example of a guy you really want to like, you just can't. It's going to be more than the film, because everyone's going to want to draft someone who looks like him. Where do we feel comfortable?
Real quick, did you like his film better than Mason Smith's? Because I think I did. I think I gave Mason Smith like a fifth rounder last year.
Yes, I liked Mason Smith's freshman film better than all of their film, but I also liked Alfred Collins' freshman film a little bit. I can't remember because that was so long ago, but I remember like, this guy's going to be a first round pick. and then have just kind of knocked him ever since. Mason Smith's freshman film, best of the film I've seen from either one of the guys. Last year of college, granted, I've only watched the Michigan game so far. Last year of college for Alfred Collins, last year of college for Mason Smith, I would take Alfred Collins.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too.
But there's no ACL like with Mason Smith that he may have just not been right, but I still would have never drafted him. So that is that. He is playing for the Jaguars, so we'll see how he does. Maybe he can help turn around that team that looks like they're destined for Shador Sanders or someone else in the first round. I kid. No. But yeah, that was Savion Williams, Malachi Starks, Nick Singleton, and Alfred Collins. Thank you for listening to the Draft Report. Catch us every Wednesday talking all things NFL draft related.